The Space Show, bringing the universe home to the Bayside, Wednesday evenings at 7 p.m.
If you have watched too much science fiction, you may associate that sound with space guns and lasers. The military use of space doesn't sound like that in reality. Earlier this year, the Australian Financial Review reported that the Australian Defence Force will form a specialist space command, bringing together officers from the Air Force, Army and Navy, as the growing militarisation of space poses threats to satellites that are essential to everyday life, as well as national security. While the Trump administration established a standalone United States Space Force, Air Marshal Hupfield has downplayed the idea that Australia would follow suit. Of several options considered, one could be for members of the three branches of the military and the Australian Geospatial Intelligence Organisation to come together under an integrated command. The component of space control, space domain awareness, allows defence to build an operational understanding of the space environment to determine if space assets are under threat. According to the Australian Financial Review, Air Marshal Mel Hupfield said, and I quote, "Space is a warfighting domain, but we're not going to militarise space. We are developing space domain capabilities to ensure our access to space." He went on to note, "As a component of space control, space domain awareness allows defence to build an operational understanding of the space environment to determine if space assets are under threat, being attacked, or subjected to accidental interference or natural phenomena." End of quote. He commented that defence needed to develop capabilities to have space control, such as being able to move vehicles and satellites to avoid debris and threats. In recognition of the growing importance of space, Air Marshal Hupfield joined international colleagues in December last year to condemn a Russian anti-satellite missile test, which is viewed as destabilizing. On April the 1st this year, the online news site The Conversation reported, and I quote, "Having a dedicated space command will bring Australia into line with Canada, India, France and Japan, all of which recently created similar organisations within their armed forces. Unlike the US Space Force, which is a separate branch of the military in addition to the Army, Navy and Air Force, Australia's Space Command will oversee space activities across the Australian Defence Force." In an editorial comment, The Conversation said, "Creating a Space Command is a smart move, but we must be careful to ensure it doesn't add fuel to a cycle of military escalation in space that has already begun." The editorial continued, "We depend on satellites for communications, navigation, banking and trade, weather and climate tracking, search and rescue, bushfire tracking and more. A conflict in space would be catastrophic for us all. There is a risk of space war because these technologies are also integral to military operations, both in peacetime and during conflict. If you want to take out your enemy's eyes and ears, you target their satellites, but not with guns, bombs, and lasers." The editorial continues, "There are many ways in which so-called counter-space technologies might threaten those satellites. This might include cyber attacks, dazzling a satellite with low-powered lasers so that it can't observe the Earth, or jamming a signal so a satellite can't send data to Earth. End of quote. Last year, the 2020 Strategic Defence Update was published. In it was the announcement that Australia intends to increase its sovereign space capabilities, with $7 billion dedicated to new space systems, mostly communication satellites. The update says we need to be able to defend those satellites, and defence needs to have centralised command and control of all government space operations. Australia also needs to be able to coordinate use of, access to, and protection of space with our allies. Well, on Saturday, it was announced that Air Vice Marshal Catherine Roberts, who is currently the head of Air Force Capability, will take over the newly created position of Head of Space Division from January. The trained engineer, who has served in the Royal Australian Air Force for 35 years, was awarded a conspicuous service cross for her work in overseeing the introduction of major aviation capabilities. The soon-to-be head of Space Division last year revealed her lifelong passion for the final frontier in a video address to the Women in Leadership Digital Summit.
Today, I wanted to take the opportunity to talk about role models and how important it is for each one of us to pave the way for the next generation as we head into a rapidly accelerating future. For me, there has been no greater honour than to serve my country. I have had the opportunity to take on some amazing roles during my career, but it would not have been possible without the incredible role models along the way. Each one of them has helped shape me into the leader I am today, which in turn will help me to inspire the next generation. Who are our role models and why do we need them? The first person I remember ever having a material impact on my ambition was Neil Armstrong. In 1969, as a three-year-old, I watched on in awe as Lieutenant Armstrong descended the ladder of the lunar lander and uttered the first words ever spoken on the moon.
It's one small step for man.
It was an incredible moment for humanity and millions of aspiring engineers that were probably created at that moment. I was no different. It was only later in life, when I was older and had time to reflect, that I realised that actually my most important female role model was probably my mother, Beth.
In March this year, we saw an example of the Air Force's move to use satellites. On March the 22nd, Rocket Lab launched the M2A satellite from New Zealand. Now listen out for a woman's voice near the end of this report, which was supplied to the space show by the Australian Defence Force. That's Air Vice Marshal Kath Roberts.
Once the rocket's up in space, the top part of the rocket will separate, and then M2, which is one of the many satellites on this mission, will be ejected out of the rocket and enter orbit around the Earth. We'll start off as one connected satellite approximately 3 months after being up in space, and once it's been completely tested and we know it's working as it's meant to, it'll then separate into two separate satellites. And this allows us to conduct, I guess, a lot of research from the separation itself, and we'll then be able to conduct formation flying, so the satellites will fly together.
Why fly in formation? There's a number of reasons for that. One of the reasons is that it means you can test inter-satellite communication links, and we will be attempting to do that and demonstrate on that mission. You can test the understanding of the way that these spacecraft interact with the environment up there. And that's very, very important. You can use one as the control and use the other as an experiment and test the difference depending on what you're doing.
We've designed all of our software so that we don't actually need to be in kind of the typical control room that you might imagine kind of at NASA, mission control room where you've got lots of different computers. We have a web-based software that we use for operations.
A previous role of mine in Air Force was a flying maritime patrol aircraft. And we used to surveil large areas of ocean and look for any ships within that area of ocean. So what the M2 satellite we'll be testing for potential future capability is looking at the whole Earth and being able to detect a large number of ships in a much smaller amount of time than an aircraft can. And what that does for us is it allows aircraft to focus on more important missions and cut down time and focus on a particular area if we need to. This is really a pivotal moment for space in Australia, and what a project such as N2 does is it allows industry to grow, it allows academia to grow, to the point that when defence needs a large space-based project, there's an industry base that's there ready to go with the experience needed to build these large and complex missions.
It's an amazing part of our space program because it's really demonstrating our sovereign capability, you know, Australia's capability to build those satellites and then test them in space. So it's all about being able to test our surveillance capabilities from the ground, but also the fact that we built these satellites in Australia, launched them, and are now controlling them from Australia.
The M2A satellite has COSPAR identifier 2021-023C and the NORAD tracking number 47,967. It is in an orbit of perigee 545 kilometres and apogee 558 kilometres and inclination to the equator of 45 degrees. That means it passes over all points of the globe between 45 degrees north latitude and 45 degrees south latitude. It passes within sight of Melbourne, which is at 38 degrees south. It comes over here about six times a day. Now, that ADF item said that M2A will separate into two satellites. As of today, it has not yet done so. In December last year, Kath Roberts outlined her vision for the future of Australian Defence when addressing the Air and Space Environmental Working Group. The ADF recorded her comments and has released them overlain with some music. Now, this is not the space show's preferred method of presentation. However, it's what the ADF has supplied.
Today, I'll update you on the Defence Strategic Update, AFSTRAT and my vision for air and space capability, my thoughts on a constant capability development cycle, the major programs and work and investments in the air and space domains.
She went on to outline her strategy.
In response to this strategic guidance, Air Force released a new Air Force strategy, AFSTRAT, which outlines the role of Air Force within the context of Australia's security and how air and space power will generate strategic effects as part of the joint force. There are a number of new ideas presented in AFSTRAT that will see us view capability differently and break us out of traditional mindsets and models.
Kath described the Australian Defence Force's air and space capabilities.
We will need to ensure that novelty and creativity are central to applying air and space power in ways that cannot be easily anticipated by competitors. To reflect our bolstering strategic focus, the vision that I have set for air and space capability is to rapidly deliver agile and creative air and space capabilities integrated into the joint force to advance Australia's security and prosperity. I see your role as critical here. Effectively leveraging Australia's defence industry and innovation capabilities is a fundamental input to air and space power for our future force.
Air Vice Marshal Kath Roberts spent some time defining the space domain and the Air Force's lead role in it.
Assured access to space is critical to defence operations and the Australian people. Our force structure, concepts and doctrine rely on access to space systems and information. The ADF is currently a consumer of space capability, relying heavily on access to US capability through our strong military and intelligence relationships. The strategic update acknowledged the criticality of the space domain, and the FSP committed $7 billion over the next decade to transition the ADF from a consumer to a sovereign contributor in space. Along with the investment in new capabilities, Defence is evolving its organisation and leadership of space from a federated to an integrated organisational approach. We have now recognised a space domain in response to the critical need for coordination across defence space stakeholders engagement with industry, and to enable action towards our space strategic goals. Following the appointment of Chief of Air Force as the Space Domain Lead, Defence has mapped out a 2-year body of work to develop and enhance the Defence Space Domain. The Space Domain will be advanced from current state into an enterprise able to operate in an integrated and networked manner in a complex and contested space environment. Defence plans to work closely with and will rely on the expertise of industry, allies and partners, and other government agencies such as the Australian Space Agency. These partnerships will ensure we transform the way we operate in space, including satellite communications, space domain awareness, position, navigation and timing, and Earth observation capabilities. As Defence develops the space domain, the decisions made will highlight the areas of existing excellence, respect the critical and valuable relationships, and build in consultation for the future. Two significant components of the space domain enhancement process will include developing a space strategy and capability blueprint, seeking to evaluate and articulate the types of capabilities Defence should aim for and integrate over time, and enhancing guidance for defence industry in cooperation with our partners at the Australian Space Agency, outlining how defence should support and develop Australian industry to deliver on the capability blueprint. A request for proposal for Project JP9360 Phase 1, Space Domain Awareness, to deliver, test and introduce into service an initial Australian space surveillance capability has recently closed. Subsequent release for tender is planned to be released in mid-2021. Continued investment and development of space capabilities will be required to further improve Defence's resilience. Investment of around $7 billion in space capabilities over the next decade will provide assured access to these services when needed. This investment will also provide new and exciting opportunities for Australian industry. Defence will look at innovative ways to expand our current space capability to meet unique Australian requirements and develop our industry partnerships.
STEM is a widely used acronym for science, technology, engineering and mathematics. Kath Roberts reminded her audience that education is essential to the Australian Defence Force's mission. She also gave a hint that she reads at least some science fiction.
We all have a shared interest in increasing the STEM pipeline for a strong Australian future talent pool. This is an area that would greatly benefit from continued collaboration between defence, industry and academia. We need to be creative and think differently here to attract people into STEM. Many of you would have come across Jasper, an animation of an adventurous young girl with big dreams to fly. And we are now working on an exciting new character who may just end up on Mars. Isaac Asimov wrote essays on the creative process and innovation. He outlined how new ideas are formed when innovators associate ideas from different fields, connecting bits of knowledge and seemingly unrelated ideas in new ways. A traditional capability procurement model is unlikely to give us creative and innovative outcomes we are looking for. We need to bring our minds together to imagine, to create, to collaborate, and to innovate, to see things from each other's perspectives.
Roberts emphasised that she has a vision for a cultural shift in the Australian Defence Force.
I would love to set bold challenges, like building a hypersonic weapon in Australia or assuring our access to space. Collaborative innovation events like SpaceFest and Industry Innovation Days will be a key part of how I would like to engage. Continuing the cultural shift to a genuine partnership between defence and industry is critical to ensuring the expertise resident in our industry base effectively supports Australia's national security. This means making it easier for industry to work with defence and access opportunities.
We have more on this topic coming up.
On FM, online and on TuneIn 24/7. This is 88.3 Southern FM.
And this is The Space Show, and this evening we are discussing some of the changes being made in the Australian Defence Force as regards the utilisation of space. On the 5th of May, Malcolm Davis, a senior policy analyst of the Australian Strategic Policy Institute wrote, and we quote, "Following the release of the 2020 Strategic Update and Fourth Structure Plan, Australia's defence organisation is taking some important steps forward in how it approaches the prospect of military operations in space." There's now a space domain review underway within the Department of Defence in response to the organisation's move to recognise space as a full operational warfighting domain, which is due for completion by the end of 2021. The question being considered is how the Australian Defence Force will operate in space, encompassing everything from strategy and force posture to capability development and organisational structures. Space has been militarised since the dawn of the space age, when the use of satellites to support terrestrial military operations started in the early 1960s. Major powers have long had military space capabilities in the form of satellites for communications and for intelligence, surveillance and reconnaissance. They have also developed satellites for positioning, navigation and timing functions, along with specialized functions such as missile early warning, geodesy and meteorology. Now, as the cost and complexity of space capabilities has fallen, more countries and commercial actors are developing and deploying militarily useful space capabilities. The phrase militarization of space and weaponizing space have come to have distinct meanings. Weaponization of space implies the deployment of anti-satellite counter-space technology designed to achieve space control by attacking an opponent's space support capabilities. It's likely that Hupfield was referring to Australia not engaging in space weaponization while pursuing military space capabilities to support the Australian Defence Force's requirements, such as new satellites for communications and for intelligence, surveillance and reconnaissance. Hupfield also highlighted space domain awareness as an essential part of space control missions undertaken by the new Space Command. This monitoring activity can be done from the surface of the Earth, such as the hosted facilities at Exmouth in Western Australia, or through new capabilities, including space-based surveillance that may emerge from Joint Project 9350 and commercial projects such as Innovor's Project Hyperion. Establishing a permanent staff for an ADF Space Command and, indeed, going further to establish a formal career path for space professionals for uniformed and civilian defence employees would lift Australia's capability to manage both space capability acquisition and space policy development. It's also vital that the ADF Space Command have an enduring connection with the Australian Base Agency and Australia's commercial space sector. Harnessing our vibrant commercial space sector for satellite development, sovereign launch capability and ground segment support is an obvious step for defence. The Space Command will need permanent civilian liaison from the Australian Space Agency. An ADF Space Command centralises policy formulation and capability planning, enhances cooperation with like-minded allies, and energises networking with Australia's rapidly growing commercial space sector. It can also contribute towards more ambitious opportunities for the ADF in using space. For example, there's growing support in the space sector for Australia to develop the means to launch Australian-made satellites on Australian launch vehicles from Australian launch sites on a regular basis. That would be an indicator for a mature national space capability that could be transformational for ADF space operations. But that vision needs a coherent organisational core in order to be realised. an ADF Space Command that brings together and sustains expertise and skills in a logical and sensible step towards achieving this goal. In embracing a Space Command, Defence has signalled an important next step for Australia in space. Well, those were the views of Malcolm Davis, a senior policy analyst of the Australian Strategic Policy Institute.